In life, we plod. Doggedly and slowly, we trudge through our days and years and careers. We go to ball games and concerts, church and work, school and the gym. There is a rhythm to the way we live our lives. We invest in a community. We dwell, we give, we partake. We are a plodding people. And this is a good thing. It's not bad, except over time. If we are not careful, we become unconscious to the rhythm and the ways in which we partake in community. Our patterns take over and we get lost into the rhythm of our day and we become unconscious. When this happens, we lose sight to the reason why we were plotting to begin with. We just go down old paths, but we forget what led us there. I visited a hospice patient years ago. It took me several visits to get him to open up about his life. I would go and I would ask him questions about his childhood, and he just couldn't access that part of his memory bank. He had been living on a conveyor belt for so long that he just focused on his daily rhythms of eating and surviving. He forgot how to tap in to his earliest memories. And the truth is, this happens to all of us. Our unconscious selves, they lose the ability to self-reflect. And it's incredibly sad. I didn't give up on this man, though. Over the course of a few weeks, I kept going back to visit, and he started to remember. He started to tell stories of when he played t-ball or stories of working on his parents' farm. He had a creek that he loved to wade in, and he loved this one secret hideout that he's the only person in the world who's to this day even knows about it. He had a group of five friends since kindergarten, and they ate together on a weekly basis until the last friend died the year before. He was the last one in his group. As he became more and more conscious of where he was, his memory started to return. He told about his first house that he bought and the job that he had as a teenager delivering newspapers. He talked about how proud he was of his daughters and the events that led up to his wife's death. He began to speak more openly about his feelings. Over the weeks, his demeanor changed. His face lifted. He smiled more. You could tell that these memories were comforting him, even in the face of death, because they were connecting him to the divine. When we live in our unconscious self, it's regrettable because it disconnects us from the divine. And the sad part is, so many of us do it. We do it all the time. We live unconsciously almost every day. And because of this, there's something that grows spiritually in the shadows of our lives, and it's unhealthy. So I want to share something with you that is completely anecdotal. I have no scientific evidence to prove the statement that I am about to make, but I still think it's worth saying. This comes from my experience, and I doubt that you're going to disagree with me. So here it is. That which grows in the shadows of our unconscious life is shame. The hospice patient lived unconsciously for so long, he was dying in his shame. Shame of being sick enough to die. Shame of Pastor Gretz. Shame of not being a good enough father or son. What bubbled up from the shadows from him was a heaping pile of shame. But as he became more conscious of me and himself and his memories and of God, he let down his guard. He became vulnerable, opened up to his past, and what he discovered, also hiding in the shadows of his life, was not shame, but also joy and laughter and love and grace. So, finding ways to become more conscious is perhaps what this whole spiritual life is about, because it can literally change our lives. It can literally draw us into and connect us deeper to the divine truths of this world. Now, if you need proof of what I'm talking about, you don't have to look further than Luke chapter 5. Jesus arrives in Gennesaret. A crowd is starting to follow him wherever he goes. We know from Luke 4 that he is jumping from synagogue to synagogue. He's teaching, he's preaching, he's healing, he's performing miracles of all kinds. On this particular day, Jesus shows up to the seashore, and so do hundreds, maybe more, come flocking to hear what Jesus has to say. So he sees the moment as a teaching moment. He looks out into the water and he sees an empty boat. He asks the owner if he can sit in it and begin to teach. We don't know what he teaches, but when he finishes, he turns to the owner, a man in a second boat who's named Simon Peter. And he says to him, and also probably James and John and Andrew, who goes unnamed, he looks at them and he says something of great importance. And this is where the story really picks up steam for me. Here is a group of lifelong fishermen, people who have plotted their entire lives, and they are beginning to live into a rhythm that's completely unconscious. They're out on the water, they're not catching anything, they're just unconscious to where they are. Then a stranger with a huge following shows up and wants to use their boat. They know he's a miracle worker. Actually, Simon Peter's mother-in-law was one of the people that Jesus healed just a few days before. So all the fishermen, they start becoming a little more conscious to the divine moment in front of them. They let Jesus use their boat. It's a big step. They're open. They're intrigued. So Jesus turns to the fishermen, presumably to thank them for allowing him to sit in their boat. But then Jesus takes it a step further. He looks at the fishermen and says, "Hey guys, you aren't catching much. Put out into the deep water and let down your nets for a catch." Then Peter answered, "But Master, we've been working all night long and we haven't caught a thing. Yet if you say so, we'll let down our nets." When they had done this, they caught so many fish that their nets were beginning to break. So they signaled for their partners in the other boat to come and to help. And they came and they filled both boats so much that both boats began to sink. It's an amazing story. And it's also at this moment that Peter fully awakens to the divine reality that is in Jesus. And it is life-pausing for him. Peter is standing face to face with literally a miracle worker. So he gets out of the boat and he immediately follows Jesus for the rest of his life. I mean, that's the story. Luke 5 is the calling of the first disciples. Peter was unconscious, fishing away, not doing much. Jesus shows up, teaches an amazing lesson, performs a miracle, and sure enough, all the disciples say, "This is worth me following. I'm going to give my life to it." That's the story, right? No. I mean, it sort of is, but no. There is a huge missing piece if that's all you read in Luke 5. I mean, Jesus does show up and teach. He does perform a miracle, and the disciples are magically compelled to do nothing else but to leave everything and follow him. That is sort of how it happens. But there's something more happening still. Something you need to see in verse 8. "But when Simon Peter saw the miracle, he fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, 'Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man.'" Peter is not initially attracted to Jesus' movement. He's repelled from it. I mean, he's dumbfounded by the miracle, of course. He is moved by whatever Jesus teaches on the water. But when it comes to actually giving up everything and following Jesus and becoming a disciple, the miracles and the teachings of Jesus are not enough for Peter. Why? Because when we unconsciously get close to the divine, it triggers our shame. But Simon Peter fell down at Jesus' knees, saying, "Go away from me, Lord. I am a sinful man." In our unconscious selves, our shame builds, and we think we shouldn't be allowed to be so close to something so perfect. Our shame is triggered by the holy. In 2009, I had a trip of a lifetime. I went to the Middle East for 3 weeks with 30 seminary students, two Old Testament professors, and an archaeologist. We climbed Mount Sinai at 2 a.m. That's the kind of trip we were on, so we could see the sunrise from Mount Sinai. Now, we were up on top of Mount Sinai minutes before the sunrise, and there was a woman who could not stop crying. She was sobbing, really, and it was making the whole group rather uncomfortable. I tried to interrupt all of her crying and to interject something that to try to make her stop and to calm down, but she just kept crying and crying and crying. I got nowhere with this woman. She couldn't articulate why she was crying. She just needed to do it. I did not know this in 2009, but I know it to be true today. Here's what was going on. She unconsciously got too close to the divine. It triggered her shame because she thought she didn't belong in front of something so perfect. In her shame, she didn't think she deserved to be so close to the holy. She was threatened by it. When we live unconsciously, when we are unconscious to our place in the kingdom of God, when we are unconscious to the divine mystery that is in and around and flowing through us, then the holy stops being attractive and it becomes repulsive. We reject it out of our shame. Which is why I believe the number one job of the church is to help people become spiritually conscious. Because anyone outside of the church, and even some of us inside of the church, who are living our lives unconscious of the divine truth of God's love and grace, the chances are we are operating from a deep-seated feeling of shame. But to have a church that helps us become conscious, then we would have a community that's not built on fear or shame, but a community that is birthed from grace and from love. A community that is living with a sense of purpose and calling and joy. Now, I have thought about this for a long time, and I think I'm right. The church's number one goal is to do for others what we see Jesus do for Peter in Luke 5. To help everyone who walks in these doors to become spiritually conscious, to awaken to the holy. Verse 10. Then Jesus said to Simon, "Do not be afraid. For now on, you will be catching people." This verse could not be more important. Jesus reassures Peter, "Do not be afraid." And then he promises Peter, "From now on, you're going to be with me. We're going to take the skills that you've learned and we're going to make disciples across the world." The assurance and the promises, that's what moves Peter from his unconscious reality to his awakening in his spirit. And this detail has to be understood. Jesus' teachings and miracles, they piqued Peter's interest, but they were not enough to make him want to be a disciple. They were not enough to make him want to get out of his boat. Shame kept him rooted where he was. Shame made him look away. Shame made him hostage in a spiritually unconscious state. And the same is true for all of us. We can come to church every Sunday and hear a good story about a good man who did a good thing 2,000 years ago. But that doesn't mean you're going to leave here a disciple of that good man. Being in the presence of God at church doesn't magically make you a disciple. Rather, it exposes you to consciousness, leaving you vulnerable and having to decide, are you going to bury yourself in your shame or are you going to claim your belovedness? Here's the terrible truth about the church. I rarely speak ill of the church because I love the church. It's the greatest manifestation of Jesus Christ in the world when healthy. But there are churches that are significantly unhealthy. And here is where we have damaged humanity for too long. For the longest time, the church has left people sitting right where Peter is in the boat. We've left people sitting in a sanctuary, plodding through their shame, reminding them exactly of what their worst fear is, that you are a sinner from whom God cannot do anything with. The church has made billions of converts over the years. The church has taken billions of dollars from you, feeding a lie to the world. And the lie is this, that you should be ashamed of yourself. I know it's a lie because I see what Jesus says to Peter in Luke 5. He meets him in the midst of his own shame, in his own boat, and assures him that you don't have to be afraid, that you belong. You no longer have to live in shame. I can use you. From now on, you're going to help me catch people. Now, if the church could start helping people move from their unconscious life to consciously accepting their blessedness, then we'd be making disciples every single week. And we would have a lot more moments like verse 11. When they brought their boats to shore, they left everything and followed Jesus. And isn't this really the purpose of church? Shouldn't it be an opportunity for us to awaken our spiritual unconscious lives and to see Jesus for who He is, to experience spirituality itself, and to realize that Jesus meets us on our path, enters into our shame, and shines for us a new light? I sure hope we're doing that for you. If we're not at First Baptist, then we have failed you as a church.